Proverbs 6, I'll begin in verse number 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. So a few words there maybe that aren't usual. Look at verse 5. Deliver thyself as a roe. A roe would be like a deer or something like that. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter. And then we look at verse number 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend. Surety, we often think of like co-signing, but really all it means is you're guaranteeing something. It could be by collateral. Maybe you gave collateral on behalf of someone. But you're the guarantee of some type of loan or financial arrangement. That's the usual idea when you think about surety. And so we're going to talk about this idea about wisdom and business. Now, even though Proverbs 6, as you read through Proverbs 6, has a financial slant to what's being taught, it's more than simply using money wisely. The idea is inclusive in it, but it's not just that. It's not just here's what you ought to do with your money. It's a broader idea. It's really dealing with this broader application of a wise approach about just doing business. So it could be actual business. It could be doing business with others. Let's say you're buying something, you're selling something. It could be different applications here, but it's a broader application rather than just like balancing your checkbook, which would be a good idea. So now there are different aspects. Now follow me here, and this will kind of give you a little bit of background, a little bit of introduction, and then we'll get into the main lessons. So there are different aspects. When you think about financial wisdom, there's different aspects. The first is and we'll go from basic to a little bit more advanced. The first, very basic understanding how finances work. Now, some people say, well, doesn't everyone understand that? Let me tell you, if you look at the world around you, you'd realize not everyone understands how finances work. This is a true story. I tell you this story, and it sounds like I'm making it up. This is a true story. This actually happened. There's a person, and they had never had a checking account until they got older. And now that they're older, they got this checking account. They had a checkbook, and the bank started contacting them, telling them, you are overdrawn, and you are in trouble. And they began arguing with the bank. They said, that cannot be. I cannot be out of money. There's no way I'm out of money. And the bank kept saying, no, you're beyond out of money. You're in the negative. You're in the hole. You owe us. And they said, there's no way. I can prove I have money in the bank. And they said, how? And here's what they said, because I still have more checks. You can't run out of money until you run out of checks. Now, wouldn't that be nice, but it doesn't work that way. So there was just no understanding about how basic finances work. And now some people have that issue, and so you need some basic understanding. Probably today, but that maybe not be as common, the idea of the checkbook. But some people do this. I've heard people say this. They will say, well, I want to go buy something. And they'll bring up their phone. They'll look on their app for their bank. And they'll say, well, I got like $25 in the bank, so I can spend like $25. Let me tell you, if that's your thinking, you're going to go under. Because the only that means is this. At that point in time, maybe it's $25. But who knows what's coming in yet? Who knows what money hasn't taken out? And sometimes the bank are several days behind. You go out and use your debit card, it may be 3 or 4 days before that actually ends up hitting the bank. And so it's having a basic understanding. And that's not where we're going tonight, but there should be some basic understanding of how finances work. Some people get themselves in trouble. They just don't really understand how these numbers work. So that's the first. That's the first aspect, real basic understanding. Then there's a second. And that is this, the character to live within a budget. Now that is even a bigger problem. It starts from the top, called the U.S. government, and it works all the way through our society. Now it's not wrong, I'll just tell you this is my opinion, okay? Opinion, that's all it is. And opinions are like armpits, and they usually stink, okay? So this is my stinky armpit opinion, okay? Here's my opinion. I don't have a problem with having a credit card and charging. Now, my thought is this. I don't charge more than I'm going to pay off when that bill comes in. I will charge $100, but as that bill comes in, I'm paying the whole $100. I like zero balance after the bill's paid. And so I don't have a problem with a charge card. I don't have a problem with getting a loan. I don't have a problem with, several other things you do. But as long as you have, you know what money's coming in, and you know you can afford to pay that bill, then there's some different ways financially that you can do some things to help yourself out. And so, but it begins with a character to live within a budget. Now, you cannot always control how much money comes in, but you can control how much money goes out. You can't always dictate. If you're struggling financially, you can't always increase the income. It doesn't always work that. But you can always deal with the outgo and say, well, we're going to make sure that thing stays lower so that there is a surplus. And so that we can stay within. So there's a certain character to live within a budget. And as you go through life, different things happen and things you can't control. And so and we all have different financial struggles at different times. My wife and I were talking today, and at this point in our life, finance is a whole lot easier than there was at other points. Other points, it was much harder, much more difficult, much more wringing of hands and weeping and wailing and all that. But so you go through ups and downs, but you still need to have a certain character to live within a budget. But we're not going to go that direction either. That's the second. The third is much broader. And probably this is where we, even if we get the first two, this is the one we sometimes struggle with and gets us in some trouble. And that is this, principles that deal with doing business. Just understanding business interactions with people. And we get ourselves in trouble because even though we understand how finances work, and our own personal budget we're pretty good at as far as trying to pay bills off, but then we get ourselves entangled, which is a word we're going to use quite a bit here in the next point. We get ourselves entangled in things that we shouldn't be entangled in, and all of a sudden it becomes like dominoes, and then we're hurting. So we're going to look at five principles that deal with doing business with others that we see here in Proverbs 6. And we're going to use it in a broad sense, because for some people, like Brother Myers, he has his own business. Well, that's one thing, but we all don't have our own business. But we all are doing business somehow. You're buying something, you're selling something. Everyone's doing business. And so that we're looking at it in that way. So here we go. Number one, here's our first lesson. Be careful of financial entanglements with friends or family, or friends and family, or fellow church people. Could put that in there too. This idea of surety means kind of like a co-signing or some type of collateral that you're making some type of guarantee for someone else. And what Proverbs says, be careful, because when you do that, you are entangling yourself in ways that you may not understand what you're doing. So when you co-sign or guarantee a debt for someone, you're entangling yourself in their life in ways that may prove to be very difficult or frustrating. Brother Howes used to do this often. He would tell people in the church, if you are both in this church, do not go in business together. Don't go in business with someone else in this church, because you're going to get mad. You're going to leave church. All kinds of problems come in that way. And people say, oh no, we'll just figure it out as we go. And what you figure out is things don't go the way you want, and then all of a sudden problems come in. And that's exactly what Proverbs is talking about. Be careful. If you're in some type of indebtedness because of someone else, that's going to come back and bite you in a way. Now, I don't think, again, this is, I'll preface, this is my opinion. I don't think God is condemning what's the word I want? He's not saying you can't. There's a word for that. He is not, prohibiting, that's the word. He is not prohibiting cosign. I don't think he says if you cosign, that's a sin. What I think is, you need to understand when you cosign, it's probably more than what you think is going to happen. You're getting yourself entangled in ways that you may not understand you're getting yourself entangled in. And that's what he's talking about, and that's where it comes, where you need wisdom. Now, we're going to build on that in just a second. Let me just give you a couple sub-points, and I'll come back to that thought. Sub-point number one would be this. Never guarantee a debt for someone that you cannot pay back, because you might have to. If someone says, can you co-sign for this? Here's the question to ask yourself. Could I pay for this if he doesn't? Because if you can't, then don't co-sign for it. Oh, no, I can trust him. You have no idea what tomorrow holds. You have no idea what tomorrow holds. And he may be a trustworthy person. He may be your best friend. He may be your brother, your uncle, or your son, or whatever. But you have no idea what tomorrow holds. And so if you cannot pay the debt back, do not co-sign. Don't guarantee a debt that you can't pay, because what's going to happen is this. When you're guaranteeing a debt for someone else and they don't come through, what happens to that relationship? Okay? All of a sudden that relationship's over, because now, well, you got to pay. I can't pay. You got to pay. You're going to hurt my credit. I don't care. You got to find a way. I'll come there and beat that out of you. You better pay that bill. And now you're fighting and fussing with each other. So don't guarantee a debt that you cannot pay, because you might just have to pay it. Now, the corollary, which we point to, is this. Never loan money that you cannot afford to lose, because you might not get it back. I'm not saying don't loan. I'm saying don't loan. Okay, if you need this money to pay your mortgage, and someone says, I know your mortgage is due next week, loan it to me today. I'll have it back for you next week. Okay, can I tell you, there's a word for that. Starts with S, and it rhymes with stupid, okay? That is not a very smart thing to do. You don't take money that you can't afford and then loan it to someone, because what happens if they can't pay it back? And now you're in trouble. And again, that's what he's saying. This becomes an entanglement, and all of a sudden now you're going to have all these relationship issues happening with friends and family members. You know what's interesting? When you do funerals, you find out for a long time there's been problems in that family. Here's how you know. I was doing a funeral once, and someone said to me, well, I asked to be introduced to other family members. They said, well, I'll introduce you to these people, but they'll have to introduce, you have to tell that person to introduce you to that side, because I don't talk to that side of the family. This is at the funeral. You're thinking, there's something here. There is something going on here. Now, I don't remember what it was. I don't think I ever knew what it was. But sometimes it's exactly what we're talking about. Someone loaned money. Someone did this or that. It didn't get paid back. And it just creates this bitterness. It goes on and on. So don't guarantee a debt that you cannot pay back. And do not loan money that you cannot afford to lose. Now, if we entangle ourselves financially with someone, like a partnership or loan money, whatever it may be, now watch this. You're entangling yourself in other areas of your life. The mic is? So if you're tangling yourself with, do you still hear it?
No, it's only when you go loud.
Oh. Okay, I'll whisper from now on. Okay. Now we'll be the liberal. My friends, when you entangle yourself financially with someone, wave again if it starts buzzing, okay? And we'll see what we can do. If you entangle yourself financially with someone, you become entangled with all the other, and I'm not trying to be unkind, but this is what you have to understand. If I'm entangled financially, then I don't know. That side. That side's buzzing. This side's not buzzing. They're both buzzing. Okay. It's bees. That's all I can tell you. So if, I don't know, I have no idea. It didn't do it before, now it is. I guess doesn't like the Bible study. So anyways, if you're entangled with them financially, you become, watch this. I'm not trying to be crass when I say this, but this is just, I think, a good way. You're getting in bed with them in ways you don't understand. You're entangled with their family, their marriage, their job, everything that they're a part of, you're a part of, because now you're entangled with them financially. And so that's what the warning is here in chapter 6. Let's go back to it. Let's look at it again just briefly. Notice what he says. Look at verse 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, in other words, you're guaranteeing a debt for his friend because you have been, went to the stranger and you became the guarantee. That's the idea. Do this. Look at verse 3. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. In other words, you better find out what's going on in his life. You better make sure he's okay, because you're indebted. You're entangled with him. And so that's the idea that the Proverbs is trying to get across. Many friendships and many family relationships have been harmed because of these financial entanglements. That's number one. Number two, here's a second lesson that we'll look at. Number two is this. Develop both a work ethic and a work wisdom. We see that in verse 6. Go back to Proverbs 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Maybe I'll move this. Maybe that might help. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little fall in the hands of sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. And then it goes on from there. So number two is develop both a work ethic and a work wisdom. Now he uses the ant as an illustration here. And most of us, that's kind of legendary, the work ethic of an ant. How many ever watch ants like during the summer? They're kind of awesome, aren't they? Especially when they pick up these big heavy things. And it's said they can carry weights up to 100 times their own weight. And so you watch these ants and they're diligently working on carrying these objects much bigger than themselves. And they will stay at it. You watch them and you can watch them. If their ant here is way over there, and this ant will just keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on. He knows where he's going. He's not slacking off. Until it's finished, he's going to keep at it. Or you maybe do that. You step on it. But he's going to just keep at it because that's the work ethic. He's just at it, at it, at it. And that's what the Proverbs is saying. That is a work ethic worthy of mirroring, being like having that type of work ethic. But not only do they have this work ethic, but they also have a work wisdom. If you ever notice and watch ants, they also, not only do they do all of this heavy lifting and this work, but they also work together. And they work during the summer so they can survive during the winter. So they use some smarts. They don't wait until the winter. They don't just work hard but do enough. They work hard and prepare because they're thinking ahead of time down the road. Now, how does that apply to us? Here's how it applies to us. Hard work in the right way at the right time provides the best results. Now, we've all said this probably. Work hard, work smarter, not harder. Okay? And the idea is you use some brains. But that doesn't mean don't work hard. And so hard work in the right way at the right time provides the best results. But we said also have a work ethic and a work wisdom. Work hard and smart. Let me give you two caveats about this. Hard workers who lack wisdom tend to waste a lot of what they earn. Now this is a sad thing. Especially if their wisdom is in dealing with business. Have you ever heard stories of someone who's worked hard all their life, put aside a nest egg, and then invested it foolishly and lost it all? I've read stories like that. I remember reading a story of a guy who, I think he put about $400,000 or something like that, $500,000 aside. He got to be like 70. He thought he had it, smooth sailing. But he had made some foolish decisions. And by 71, 72, welcome to Walmart. He's back to working. So that's what he's saying. Hard work, that's commendable. That's something that's worthy of notice and worthy of respect and worthy of honor. But also we need to have some wisdom about what we're doing. Not just hard working, but hard working with some wisdom. Now let me show you the flip side. What if you're real smart, but not a hard worker? I met some people that way. They're real smart. They'll figure out, how can I get something without doing anything? Now, people like that are dangerous because they will do things to get what they want and they'll cheat you out of what you got to get it because they don't want to put the work in it. And so it is important to both have a work ethic and a work wisdom. A work ethic without work wisdom ends up into waste, could be. Work wisdom without work ethic. Now watch this. Here's the flip side now. Smart workers who lack ethics tend to become liars or frauds. Because they're smart and they start cheating people, but they're too lazy to do the work themselves. That's why it says in verse 11, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. It's the idea of not using wisdom. So develop both a work ethic and a work wisdom. Now it's interesting, we get to verse 12. Let's just look at the verses and I'll tell you the point. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teacheth with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually. He soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. These six things that the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. Now, we're looking at that in the context of business and wisdom, so here's the point we would draw from that. Number three is this. Invest more in your reputation than in your profit margin. You know, if you're selling something, especially if you're selling something to a fellow believer, let's say you go to church with them and you're selling them something, you should go way overboard and make sure what you're doing is on the up and up. Some years ago, someone was telling me that they had a car or truck for sale. This is some years ago, like 20 plus years ago. And they told me, they said, well, you know, the rear end has some issues to it. He said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put some thick axle grease or something in it so it'll sound good for like a week so I can sell it. Think about that. Wouldn't you say it would be dishonest? But sometimes we think this way. We say, well, you know, buyer beware. Well, how about Christians act like Christians? That might be a better statement. And so invest more in your reputation than in your profit. Well, I can't sell it. If they knew what was wrong with it, I wouldn't be able to sell it. Then maybe you shouldn't be selling it. Okay? Our reputation is much more important than what kind of money we're making off of it. So invest more, again, in our reputation, who we are, what we're known to be, than our profit margin, the money we're making. Now think about it this way. False promises may produce short-term success and profit, but it will eventually be your ruin. Especially your reputation. There's a verse in the Bible. A good name is rather be chosen than what? Than great riches. And so when you're doing business with someone, it is better, I don't want to mention who they are because I think this is who, because I think I know who did it, but someone in our church did this. I think I know it is, but I don't want to mention, I may be wrong. But they were getting rid of something, a car or something like that, and they're getting rid of it. And it had some issues. And this is what they told me. They said, I'm just not confident about selling this because it may not last. And he said, even if I told him everything was wrong with it and it broke down, I would still feel bad. So here's what he said. I'm just giving it to that person. And I'll tell them everything I know is wrong with it, but I'll just give it to them. And if they want it under those conditions, they're welcome to have it. He said, now I probably could sell it for $500-$600, but I'd rather know that I'm doing right by this person. That should be our attitude, that we're more concerned about being right and doing right than making money. Now, lies and deceit will harm your reputation and keep others from wanting to do business with you. That's, what we're being taught here in Proverbs 6. Once you're identified as a liar or a cheat, it makes you a pariah to others. Okay. No one else wants to mess with you. No, I can't trust that guy. He'll rob you blind. So invest more in your reputation than your profit margin. Now let's go back to Proverbs 6, look at verse 20. My son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So now we have a fourth application, a fourth lesson, and that is this. Biblical wisdom is as important as biblical knowledge. Sorry, business knowledge. Now you need to have some smarts doing business. Yeah, but you're going to need wisdom as well. Biblical wisdom is as important as business knowledge. If you're thinking about business knowledge, okay, and let's just think, if you're going to sell something, you got to have some idea about what it's worth and how to sell it and how to market it. That's just business knowledge. Okay, and it's beneficial when you think about day-to-day decisions. But biblical wisdom helps steer you in the right overall direction. Let me see if I can give you an explanation because that may not make sense to you. Let's say you came to me, let's say you are new to this area, brand new to this area, and you say, hey, you know, I want to go out and see the lake. How can I get to Lake Erie? Here's what I can tell people, and this would be an honest answer. Head north. When you hit water, stop. That's Lake Erie. Okay, that would be a true statement. But that's really not getting them there, is it? That's a general direction. That's saying, okay, it's north of here. That's where the lake is. But exactly how you get there, it depends. If you're in North Ridgeville, I might send you up 83. If you're in Elyria, I might send you up 57. If you were out towards Amherst, I'd send you up 58. There might be a different way of going there. If you're way out maybe in Bay Village or something, that'd be a little bit different. And so the exact way of getting there is different. But the overall understanding it's north, that would be where the wisdom is. So the wisdom is the general direction. The business knowledge is the actual, go down this road, go down that road. But the biblical wisdom gives us a general idea about what we're trying to do. Let me see if I can add a little bit to it to make a little bit more sense. Biblical principles provide the parameters of any decisions we make. When you think about making a decision, a lot of times you might have 10 different choices. Maybe you have 20 different choices. What biblical wisdom does is starts eliminating some of those choices. Biblical wisdom is like a fence, okay? Stay within the fence. If this decision is outside the fence, don't do that. If that decision's out, don't do that. Biblical wisdom is the parameter. And you may have 10 decisions within the parameters, and that's when you got to have some smarts and some understanding about some stuff. But the wisdom becomes those parameters. It becomes the limits of where you're going to make the decision. So business knowledge may determine the exact decision, but biblical wisdom eliminates those decisions which are outside of the parameters of biblical principle. When you think about wisdom, wisdom doesn't always lead you to the one perfect decision. Sometimes wisdom simply eliminates all the bad decisions, and then you got to use some smarts to try to figure out what is the best decision. Let me give you an example, because I feel like I'm leaving you hanging there. Let's say you're going to buy a car. And you say, Pastor, what car should I buy? Here's my answer. I don't know. What can you afford? How many people are you going to put in the car? If you were, let's say like the Maileys, you're young, you have a couple young kids, might have a few more kids. Okay? Me telling him buy a two-seater sports car probably was not what I tell him. But I don't know. Maybe he has four or five other cars in his garage. You never know. I don't know. I don't know what you need. I don't know what you're going to use it for. We were out soul winning Thursday, and we saw this two-seater something. It was, I don't think it was a BMW, but it was a nice sports car. And I don't have kids at home. My wife and I, man, we could go tooling down the highway, or, man, it'd be fun. Now, that's a little different. But let me tell you, there are some parameters. Can you afford it? Okay, if you can't afford it, it doesn't matter what car it is. Don't buy it. Do you need it? If you don't need it, don't buy it. Doesn't matter if you can afford it. Doesn't matter. All my family can fit in a car, but you already have two or three cars. You don't need that one. And so wisdom, what wisdom does is eliminates all of the bad decisions and creates kind of a parameter and says, okay, unless it's in the parameter, we're not going to do that. That's what wisdom does. The exact decision may need some knowledge and some understanding, but the wisdom becomes the parameter. And let me give you the fifth one. This one I think is maybe the most thought-provoking one. Proverbs 6, go back with me to verse 24. This goes all the way to the end of the chapter. We're not going to read all the verses. I'm just going to kind of hit and miss and go through it. Verse 24, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Then it says this in verse 26, for by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Then it goes down to verse number 32. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. Here's a fifth lesson about doing business, trying to have some wisdom about it. Moral failures will create business failures. In other words, sin in other areas of life will definitely affect you financially. Can you think of anyone recently, not in necessarily Christian circles, anyone recently who has fallen from his perch all the way down because of moral failure? I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, I can give you a whole list. Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods would be a good example. Boy, man, all of a sudden all the sponsors started fleeing him. I mean, he was. I remember, you know, the idea of Tiger Woods, it was just like he was some god or something, some golf god, but then all poof, fell apart. How about this name? Ready? Harvey Weinstein. Just a few years ago, his name moved people. I mean, he was brokering big deals. Everyone wanted to be sitting at his table. And now the guy's, you know, he's like cancer. He's like leprosy. Everyone runs from him. Everyone has some reason not to like him. Now what happened? He didn't make a bad business decision. His moral failures caught up with him. And I think one of the great warnings in Proverbs 6 is this: don't think you can live in sin and not affect the rest of your life. Sometimes that's what we think. We think, you know, here's my business part of my life. Here's my financial part. Here's how I pay for my house or do these things. But I can live apart from God and be involved in things I shouldn't be involved in, and I can keep those two separate. And what Proverbs 6 is saying, no, those are going to come back. They're going to intersect. And those moral failures are going to create some great hardships in your life. Regardless, you may make all the right business decisions, but that ain't going to matter. It's going to come like a house of cards falling down. So the most effective, now we're going to apply it here a little bit broader than what I just did, and that is whole idea of it being deceitful or cheat or whatever moral failure it may be. Okay, the most cost-effective way to do business is do right the first time and every time. It's the best way to do business. When you get, and I think sometimes these moral failures start causing us then to cheat on this other side because of other things going on. Personal moral failures will rob you of your wealth, of your reputation, and opportunities. You cannot, we try to separate the two, but it doesn't work that way. They connect with each other. Someone cheats on their wife, ends up divorced, they lose their house, they lose their car, they lose their job. Someone, or maybe someone is cutting corners at work and doing things they shouldn't be doing. Someone gets hurt. Now all of a sudden everything in their financial world is turned upside down. So they do affect, they do impact each other. Now let me give you one more aspect of this. Go back with me to verse 30. Men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his soul when he's hungry. I think we'd understand that. If a guy was really hungry and he was breaking in somewhere and stealing just to feed himself or feed his family, we'd understand that. We'd say, boy, you know, when you're hungry like that, especially if your family's hungry, who knows what you'd do? But it doesn't stop there. Look at the next verse. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. So even if you're stealing to feed your family, we may not despise him. We may understand what's going on, but he still is going to have to pay for what he's doing. In other words, if you go shoplifting at Walmart and you claim, well, I need this food for my family, so you're walking out with all this food, you know, with all this food, and you get busted, they may say, boy, I really feel bad. Maybe I could buy some food for your family. But we're still going to prosecute you because what you did was illegal. And that's what he's saying, that even though your intention for doing wrong may have been a good intention, it does not stop the adverse effects that come into your life. So the motivation behind the failure does not keep it from having adverse effects on us. I think that's an important thing we need to understand. When it comes to doing right, whatever excuse we use not to do right isn't going to pan out. It's eventually going to come back and it's going to create other problems in our life. So let me just put it this way. Good intentions do not negate bad consequences. So those are five we look at as general principles about just doing business, using some wisdom about doing business. So let's give you two conclusions. Here's the first one. Proverbs 6 provides wise parameters for each of us as we think about businesses. They're parameters, they're a fence. They're not meant to govern every decision and say, here's the right decision. They're a broader type of aspect. They're to create a fence and saying, with whatever decision is, it has to be within these parameters. If it's not within these parameters, don't. If you got to lie about it, don't do it. If you got to cheat someone, don't do it. If you got to be crooked in a business decision, then don't make that decision. That's the idea of the parameters. Now, there are additional principles that can be applied to specific decisions, but staying within these parameters helps eliminate many foolish choices or foolish decisions. And that's how Proverbs 6 is written. It's the fence. It's the parameter. It's not written to give us instruction on every decision, but to create parameters that all decisions stay within so that they are wise in dealing with business.